Unknown caller, do not engage. By Gotta Love V. Read by Cookie Mom 6067. Steve checks the last tick box on his tablet with a smile. His order is complete and without errors this time, which is sadly not something that happens often and always tends to put him in a good mood. "Hey, Richard," Steve calls out. Richard startles, looking up from something that must have been totally engrossing on his phone. "Yes?" he asks, and then sees that all of the delivered boxes have been opened and Steve's tablet screen is off. "Is everything okay?" "All good," Steve confirms, "though I'll probably do another small order later today." Last night must have been busy, because the alcohol stock behind the bar is dangerously low for several items, and they'll need more tequila than the one bottle in today's delivery before the weekend is over. "Sure," Richard says. "I'll see you when I see you," he adds with a salute, before hopping back in his truck once Steve has signed off his delivery confirmation. Steve's phone vibrates in his pocket and he pulls it off. He furrows his brows in confusion at the unknown number and checks out the text. "Received from unknown caller at 3:36. Hi, it's me. Surprise? Frankly, I am astonished I remembered your number." He's about to reply that it's an error. He certainly didn't give his phone number away lately, when Steve has a nagging doubt and pulls up an IM convo with Nat. "SR sent at 3:37. Did you give my phone number to someone instead of your own again?" Thankfully, the answer comes fast. "Received from Nat at 3:39. "Shit, really?" he remembered. "SR sent at 3:39. He seems just as surprised by this as you are. He was drunk?" "Received from Nat at 3:40. "Yes, completely smashed. Someone had to come and get him, even." "SR sent at 3:40. "Then why give him my number instead of turning him down neatly?" She's not shy at all. Breaks about four hearts every shift. "Received from Nat at 3:41. "Lethal puppy eyes?" "Received from Nat at 3:41. "Couldn't bring myself to kick him when he was down. You're better at the whole letting them down gently thing anyway." Steve rolls his eyes and sighs. "SR sent at 3:41. "Nat, this is the last time I'm doing this. You need to commit to breaking hearts on your own." "Received from Nat at 3:42. "Ingrate. I'm doing you a favor. He's totally your type." "SR sent at 3:42. "I am pretty sure I'm not his. I have a feeling he likes red-haired women." "Received from Nat at 3:42. "Don't sell yourself short. You know you're pretty much everyone's type." As nice as the sentiment is, Steve shakes his head ruefully. "SR sent at 3:43. "Nice try. Still last time." "Received from Nat at 3:43. "Okay, thanks. Don't be too rough." That is surprising. She seems to actually like the guy. "SR sent at 3:44. "I'll be just gentle enough," Steve promises. He's closing their convo and already thinking about how he should do it when a new message from the same unknown number pops up. "Received from unknown caller at 3:44. "Sorry. Shouldn't have bothered you." If Steve doesn't answer this text, that will most likely be it. The guy on the other side will just chalk it up to a false number given by that hot redhead behind the bar. He might never even set foot in the place again, which ties everything up with a bow. But it's also shitty. Since the guy was polite, Steve decides to be more considerate than that. "SR sent at 3:46. "It's fine. Sorry. I was away from my phone for a second." He's typing the rest, but words pop back almost immediately. "Received from unknown caller at 3:46. "Horror. And you survived? You're tougher than me. I hit panic mode if 3 feet away from mine and risk imminent death if in a different room." Really, really fast. Boy, he was waiting for a reaction for sure. "SR sent at 3:47. "I once went a whole weekend without mine." "Received from unknown caller at 3:47. "I am horrified, shocked, and appalled." Steve smiles because he's got to give it to the guy. He's got repartee. Received from unknown caller at 3:48. Hey, sorry, got to go. Just wanted to thank you for last night. For listening. Wow. Natasha must really have liked this guy if he got the impression she was actively listening. Not that she can't. But Natasha generally doesn't bother engaging drunks. But then again, if the man was so drunk he had to be dragged out, he might have mistaken Natasha's politeness with interest. SR sent at 3:49. Not a problem. Take care of yourself. The unknown caller doesn't reply for long seconds, then. Received from unknown caller at 3:50. I'm trying, believe it or not. Ciao. And that, Steve thinks, is probably the end of it. After all, the man didn't try to flirt, not really, or ask to see Nat again. Steve puts his phone away and gets back to work hauling in the cartons full of new liquor bottles. They should have a busy evening, and he doesn't have the time to be concerned about a guy he's never met. The weird thing is that Tony, the guy named himself the second time he reached out, hey, Tony again, check this out, doesn't start conversations. He either writes nonsense or sends a link or a picture. Steve cannot find a pattern, neither in the subjects or a specific time or situation when it happens. It starts by a kitten picture, a tiny thing that meows pitifully. Steve doesn't answer. A link to the benefits of eating a banana, random comment on the weather in Japan, a history of soft-serve ice cream. Steve doesn't answer either. It doesn't seem to bother Tony, who keeps on messaging almost every day, and once again Steve cannot figure out why, as he gets a link about LARP, which he learns are people who reenact Dungeons and Dragons games, but outdoors and with disguises. Then a recipe for tilapia with mango sauce. For a second, Steve thinks that Tony will actually ask for a date following this one, but no. He gets no more texts, and Steve is so curious that he almost wants to prod, but doesn't. The texts and links start again, on and off. There's a gap of 3 days, about a month after first contact, and Steve thinks that the lack of answer finally did its job. Tony has been pretty persistent for weeks there, or used Steve's number to send info into the universe, it's not clear. But when the next message does arrive, it's a link to a YouTube video of a young girl doing a long math demonstration on a whiteboard that makes no sense whatsoever to Steve. It must be good, because the comments section is full of people exclaiming about how amazing she is, and Steve finally cracks. SR sent at 11:05. Smart girl, he writes, and then curses himself. He should have let it go. Surely Tony was really about to give up. It takes long seconds for the answer to come, but it arrives in the form of two rapid texts. Received from Tony at 11:07. Smart girls are the best. Received from Tony at 11:07. So close, but made a tiny error. Oops, there goes $1 million. SR sent at 11:08. A million for a math problem? Received from Tony at 11:08. Yeah. SR sent at 11:08. And you caught the mistake? Received from Tony at 11:09. Math is kind of my thing. SR sent at 11:09. Why don't you do million-dollar problems then? Received from Tony at 11:10. I could solve 3. That means the guy is either brilliant or a total liar. SR sent at 11:10. Then get your millions. Received from Tony at 11:11. Don't need them. Kids like her do. Steve almost asks if it's a life decision, voluntary simplicity or whatever it's called, or because he's filthy rich, but he figures that if he asks no question, it means he will get no lie. SR sent at 11:12. That's generous of you. Received from Tony at 11:13. I guess. Gotta go. Ciao. And he's gone. Frankly, Steve is a bit confused, because surely Tony hoped for a reaction by keeping contact all of this time. But when it works, he's the one who disengages. It's weird. What is even weirder, though, is how Steve has kept all the random texts and links and can't see himself throwing them away anytime soon. But then again, it's not that surprising. The crux of the matter is that even though he hates to admit it, Steve is lonely. Sure, he has his friends at the bar, but they have their own lives. Tony's texts in the last month have been little attentions directed just at him, and that brightens Steve's day, making him feel connected, even if he never answered. That's probably why Steve finally cracked, unable to resist someone who tried to reach out over and over again. And who knows, maybe Tony is lonely too. It's hard, after that, to not interact with Tony. Steve never initiates it, but more and more he fires at least one text a day. Tony engages easily, but never for long. And not once does he suggest they meet, which is a relief. Steve should have come clean on not being Natasha the first they really texted with the math girl, but he hasn't. And now it's been so long that he feels like it would be weird, and he's gotten used to the light interactions. He likes Tony a whole lot. He's weird, but also obviously brilliant and funny. Tony ups the tempo on the messages, and in reaction, Steve answers more. There's rarely a day without conversations now. Unfortunately, this is one of those days. Steve checks his texts again just to be sure and sighs. What's with you? Sam asks. Steve jerks up and tries to school his face to look innocent. Nothing. Why? Sam's right eyebrow rises. Come on, man. You're making the sad puppy face. I'm not making a sad puppy face, Steve denies, rolling his eyes. You are, Sam insists. Plus, you haven't wiped down the counter yet, and the bar's been open for an hour. But not only that, you're glued to your phone. You've been all week. So what gives? Found yourself a sweetheart? No, Steve exclaims. Nothing like that. They are just texting, but it's true that Steve is invested. He wants to know more. He eagerly awaits new texts. Oh, damn it. Maybe there is something there. He likes Tony maybe a little too much. I've never seen you use that brick of a phone of yours this often, Sam adds, and you keep smiling at the thing or making sad puppy faces when it's silent. Looks like finding a sweetheart to me. It's not, Steve declares, putting the damn thing in his back pocket. He hasn't even met the guy. There is nothing between them. But sure, who could blame Steve for wanting to chat with a quick-witted person who links to whatever he finds interesting? That's all there is. Hey, I'm not judging, Sam says, raising his hands. It's nice to see you smile. I smile, Steve protests. He does, right? With us, yes, Sam says, making a gesture at the bar. But it wouldn't hurt if you left your comfort zone. It's true that Steve mostly interacts with his coworkers, but it's a choice he made when he came back to civilian life. It fulfilled his social quota with no unwanted pressure. And anyway, he wasn't emotionally available for more and knew it. It's been a couple of years now, and as much as he loathes admitting Sam is right, he should try to branch out more. I know, Steve says with a sigh. Great, Sam answers with a grin. So who's the mystery texter? I'm not sure, Steve admits, rubbing the back of his neck. Sam's eyebrow rises once more. They do that a lot. Come again? Nat gave my number to some guy instead of her own. Why the hell would she do that? Sam says, scrunching his face in confusion. She's done it a couple of times. She expects me to let them down in her place when she doesn't have the patience. Nat shuts down people every night, Sam says, as if it makes no sense. She said she didn't want to kick him while he was down or something like that, Steve explains. He knows it makes very little sense. Doesn't seem to me like you let him down gently, Sam says. Steve sighs deeply. I know, I tried. I didn't answer for a whole month, but he's something. Geez, Steve, sounds like you have a crush. Sam teases. I have no idea what he looks like, Steve is struggling to deny. His cheeks are heating up and he hates it. Besides, he was interested in Nat. I've been pretending to be her for weeks. I have a feeling that's really crappy to start something. Yeah, Sam says. Maybe not that guy. So the next person who comes in and who catches your interest, you flirt. For real. The mere idea of it makes Steve's heart race. Smiling to customers and being solicitous of their needs is easy. He's been told again and again that he's easy to talk to, which is a great quality when you're a barman. The tip jar at the end of most nights proves he's doing a good job, too. But flirting? For real? He's got an abysmal, lifelong track record at being terrible when trying to chat up people he finds attractive, always getting nervous and tongue-tied at the worst moment. Since he's been back from the war, Steve hasn't given it a decent try, even, mostly just reacting if someone was forward enough to hit on him first. And then again, not often, because he feels cornered easily. Sam might mean well, but he's asking for a lot. I'm not comfort zone, Steve, Sam says. I'm not saying it has to go anywhere. Just make a decent effort, that's all. Okay, Steve says. Okay. Attaboy. It's a quiet day. A weekday. And it's not like Sam said it had to be right now anyway. The next person who catches his interest could be in a couple of days. Now give me that phone, Sam says, reaching around Steve to pull it from his jeans pocket. He lunges at Sam to try to take it back, but Sam's quick enough to dart around the bar and dance away, Steve's phone still in hand and grin on his face. What are you doing? Steve says with a small rising of panic. Maybe Tony will text again. They had a conversation about the fifth element yesterday. It was fun. Tony could come back to it 24 hours later. It's happened before. You need a break from this non-sweetheart of yours, so no distractions while you do your job for a couple of hours and practice your moves. I'll give it back later, promise. Okay, fine, Steve says with a small smile and a nod. He knows that Sam is just trying to help, and it's true that Steve has become quite dependent on his friends and now Tony. He can do without his phone for one shift. After all, he used to barely use the thing. Steve pointedly wipes down the counter and Sam laughs, going to a customer at the end of the bar. Routine sets in, and Steve makes sure everything is stocked and that no one waits for service too long. It's a Wednesday, and a slow one at that, so it's quite relaxed. He did promise Sam that he'd make an effort to flirt, though, so he subtly checks out the customers to see if there are any possibilities. Most of them are regulars, and people he can't see himself with. The closest to interesting is Rosa, who is a nice girl that has flirted with him before, but she's in a very complicated on-and-off relationship with another regular. If Steve followed their saga right, they aren't together at the moment, but it's only a question of time before they make up. He doesn't need to get in the middle of that kind of drama. Someone accidentally dropped a pitcher of beer in one of the booths, so Steve fetches the mop and cleans it up. At least the guy responsible apologizes for the mess, which is sadly a rarity. Cleaning supplies stowed in the back store again, Steve goes back to the bar and notices a new customer, busy typing on his phone. He has no drink in front of him, probably because no one is behind the zinc. Sam is nowhere to be seen. He probably decided to go on break. Sam might tease Steve about his texting, but he's no better. Sorry to have kept you waiting, Steve tells the guy. He looks up and Steve can't help but stare, as he's slammed with a, oh damn, he's gorgeous, realization. It's the big brown eyes, mainly, that crinkle in the corner when he smiles back at Steve. It is late 30s or early 40s, if Steve would guess. The man has casually disheveled brown hair, a crisply shaved Van Dyke, and wears blocky eyeglasses that suit him just right. He's extremely handsome, and with a wide, charmer smile that hints that he perfectly knows it. Steve is so smitten that he almost misses what he says next. Not a problem, I just got in, his customer says. The guy is fiddling with a coaster, turning it in his fingers and tapping on the bar. Even his hands are nice, Steve notes. Okay, so maybe he has a thing for well-dressed men, and this one has a suit that fits like a second skin, which is unusual in a modest bar in Brooklyn. There's something about cute customer that makes Steve think he's seen him before, but then again, it's New York. Maybe he's an actor, and Steve has seen him in a commercial or an episode on TV. Who he is doesn't matter much, though. Steve made a promise to Sam, and since this guy is the first person to catch his interest, Steve makes eye contact and leans in to ask his next question. "What can I do for you?" he asks, making it as flirty as he knows how. He's terrible at this. Always has been. But somehow his intent must come across because the man's smile widens. "What's on offer?" he volleys right back, eyes sparkling and giving him a blatant once-over, and immediately Steve finds himself way over his head. This is going very fast. He tries not to freeze, but he can't sustain the eye contact. What if he blushes? It would be mortifying. As smoothly as he can, Steve gestures to the wall behind himself. "Whatever you feel like," Steve says. Not so bad a save, he thinks. Fair enough. When Steve looks back at the man, he's chewing on his bottom lip, tapping the counter rapidly with the coaster. He's scanning the bottles of liquor, top shelf scotch mostly, but looks conflicted, a mix of longing and dread, and his other hand is loosening the knot of his tie, as if he's looking for air. "You know what? I'm not sure," he says slowly, and Steve's got a feeling about this. He grabs a chilled sparkling water bottle from the fridge under the bar, the best brand they've got, and he extends it to the man. "Here, while you think about it," he says casually. The instant relief on cute customer's face tells Steve he guessed right about a complicated history with alcohol. "Thanks," he says, uncapping the bottle and taking a sip. Jose chooses this moment to come over for an order, leaning against the bar a couple of feet away. "Hey, Steve, two buds, please." It's not like Steve can ignore the patrons, so he fetches Jose his beers and then mixes a couple of drinks as requested by Rose's table. From the corner of his eyes, he notes that the handsome stranger is either scanning the bar or busy typing on his phone again. The pause gave Steve the breather he needed, and he's ready to try and speak with cute customer again, who has been checking him out. It's a thrill, he won't lie. Sam came back from wherever he was, and Steve calls him over. "You leave that one to me, okay?" he says, tilting his head towards the end of the bar. "What?" Sam says, checking out where Steve's pointing. His eyes go big, but then he grins at Steve. "Oh, Jesus, Steve. Go big or go home, right? Well, good on you, man." It shouldn't be so surprising, since Sam is the one who forced this, but Steve smiles with a shrug. Cute customer is definitely easy on the eyes, and he seems up for some flirting himself, too, which is going to make the whole thing easier. "Go," Sam says with a light shove. Armed with his trusty towel, Steve goes back to the end of the bar, opens the fridge, and moves a couple of things in it just to seem to be busy. Cute customer has put his phone down on the bar and is slowly sipping his water, observing Steve. It's a heady feeling. What can he say, though? Steve's eyes fall on the phone again, or he guesses it's one, even though at the moment it looks like a blank piece of glass in the shape of a rectangle. "I've never seen anything like this," Steve says, nodding to the device. The man grins, twirls it with a finger. "Yeah, new design. This one is a prototype. Maybe he gets to test them. That's pretty cool. It's a phone, right?" "Among other things, but basically, yes." He swipes his fingers on the surface, and the thing lights up. Another gesture, and a little holographic screen pops up in the air, reclined from the phone. "Holy shit," Steve breathes out, impressed. He approaches, eyes fixed on the device. "What's that for?" "It's just a screen. It shows pictures, videos, a browser, whatever." The man grabs the phone, flicks it, and then holds it up for a second where Steve hears a little click. When he sets it down again, he taps two or three commands, and a picture of Steve, looking frankly astonished, is hovering in the air. "There you go, handsome." "That's amazing," Steve says, pretending he didn't hear the endearment, or that it's a normal way to speak to people. Maybe it is for cute customer. "How come you get to have a prototype?" The man raises his eyebrows, as if he's surprised at the question. "I ask nicely, and R&D indulges me." "Cool." Steve dares to reach to touch the hologram and smiles at how his finger gets painted with the colors of the photograph. It's really just a projection, but it's flawless. I sure hope so. It does everything a smartphone can do, but better. A touch to the surface replaces the photograph with a weather forecast. Another pulls out a listing that looks like stock prices. Steve nods as he pulls back. Very impressive. Now finished with the water bottle, cute customer smiles again and folds the screen back into the phone. It should be marketed in a couple of months. It frankly looks like a gadget that would be terribly expensive, though. I'm sure it's going to be very popular. Do you want another? Steve asks, collecting the empty bottle and putting it in the recycle box. No, thanks. It's not that you're not particularly lovely, but I've got to go, the guy says, and that's a huge disappointment. He's taking out a bill from his wallet, and by the second Steve sees his chances of seeing him again shrinking like a snowball in the desert. On an impulse, Steve grabs a pen and writes his name and number on a napkin, then slides it across the top of the bar. His heart is thundering in his chest, but he figures he's got to act or he'll regret it. Call me if you want to go grab a coffee sometime, Steve says. The man's answering smile widens, at least until he looks at the napkin, and it freezes. He then furrows his brows and looks back at Steve, looking confused. My number? To call me? Steve says slowly. 718-555-4976, the stranger says. For some reason, he doesn't look pleased. Voice flat. Yes? Honestly, Steve has no idea what the problem is. Okay. With a tight little smile, cute customer nods, pockets the napkin, turns on his heels, and promptly leaves. Lost, Steve looks at Sam and sees that his friend has witnessed the end of the exchange and has his brows furrowed too. What was that? Sam says, coming over. I have no idea. Sam huffs and grabs Steve's shoulder, shaking him lightly. Whatever, I think you did great. I have no idea what his problem is either, but hey, it figures he would be a bit of a weirdo. Steve sighs, bummed out. It sucks. That guy was really cute. Sam, being the bro he is, gives him back his phone, surely to make him feel better. You did good. You can have this back. It's been buzzing all night, too. Steve huffs and smiles because he might have most probably struck out, but Tony is always entertaining. Some nights he just keeps sending one weird link after another, and Steve sure needs the pick-me-up. There are a string of bubbles in the convo, but they are all text and starts about an hour ago. Received from Tony at 12:25. I probably shouldn't have done this without asking you, but I think I'm safe because I don't see you. Steve frowns. Received from Tony at 12:31. Frankly, I'm not 100% sure I'm in the right place. It's pretty hazy. Received from Tony at 12:38. How is all the staff beautiful? Jesus. Received from Tony at 12:44. You know what? There's a considerate hot blonde that I think is my new favorite. A sense of dread starts to spread through Steve's chest. Received from Tony at 1:15. Water at a bar. Me. What is the world coming to? Shit, Steve curses and he dials Nat's number. What the hell, Steve? She answers after two rings. It's almost 2 a.m. on her day off, so he understands she's annoyed that he's calling. He might pay for that one, but it's an emergency. The guy you gave my number to, a couple of months back, he says urgently. Remember him? What? Instead of giving your number, you gave mine, annoying habit of yours. You said he was drunk, wanted me to let him down gently, Steve insists. What about him? Nat says through a yawn. What did he look like? Steve asks, desperate. Brown hair, brown eyes? Yeah, she says. I'll send you a pic. Give me a sec. A pic? You have a pic of him? That makes no sense. Steve, he's one of the richest men in the world and a playboy on top. It's pretty easy to find a pic of him, Nat says to Steve's complete bewilderment. His phone dings and he hurries to open the attached pic and gapes because, yes, that's cute customer. He's famous? It's Tony Stark. Of course he's famous. Oh, shit. Tony Stark. Stark, like former Stark weapons and bombs, or like current Stark green energy and technological wonders. Extra futurist-looking phones for the new model, apparently. Tony, who sends weird links and could solve millennium problems, but said he didn't need the $1 million that came with them. Why the fuck did you give my number to Tony Stark? Steve's raising his voice. He can't help it. When he sees he's drawing eyes, he leaves the bar to find a spot that is calmer, with less noise and curious gazes. I'd seen him on the news. It was the 20th anniversary of his parents' death, and those vultures were on his case because of it. And he told me about how everyone left, even the perfect girlfriend. Huge, sad eyes. It was terrible. Insisted on asking for my number, and I cracked. I gave yours. But I was sure he'd black it out. What about him? How is a 2-month story relevant? Steve wants to hit his head against the wall. He came over tonight. Looking for me? That makes no sense. I've been texting with him. Then what's the problem? Nat asks, exasperated. I never told him I wasn't you, Steve admits. That, in fact, is the crux of the matter. He really should have come clean to Tony when he started texting back. So he thinks we've been texting for 2 months, she says. It would have been nice to know, in case he came back to the bar and picked up on a conversation I knew nothing about. Yeah, well, he won't be back, Steve says, sitting down in the tiny office space in the personnel-only area. The face Tony made when he recognized the phone number was clear enough. Sorry I disturbed you, Nat. Good night. I'll want the full story, she insists before they hang up. Shit, what a nightmare. Steve had found cute customer fun and interesting, but he'd liked his text buddy a whole lot more, and it's that loss that hits the hardest. Steve goes through the messages left by Tony again and gets to the ones that follow mentioning the water that made him realize what had gone down. Received from Tony at 1:17. Damn, he's fine. Received from Tony at 1:17. You are too, if I remember right. Oh boy, is that weird? Sorry. Received from Tony at 1:25. Not sure that hanging out in a bar is the best thing for me. Received from Tony at 1:26. Oh, he's coming back. Sorry, lady. You snooze, you lose. Then nothing. And fuck. For a moment there, Tony had been into him. If it wasn't for the whole phone number issue, Steve would probably have scored a date. But then again, maybe he can salvage this, or at the very least, he needs to apologize. Taking a deep breath, he types his own message. It takes a lot of time to write it out. SR sent at 1:58. I know this looks bad. It is bad, but there's an explanation, and hopefully you'll want to hear me out. He sends it, then winces as he rereads it. Way to omit the important stuff right off the bat. So he sends another text. SR sent at 1:59. I'm very sorry. I never wanted to deceive you. My name is Steve, by the way. Dead silence. It was to be expected. Steve understands that Tony probably doesn't want to talk to him right now, if ever. With a sigh, he pockets his phone and goes to finish his shift. Steve doesn't hear back from Tony at all. He has received no random link, insult, or answer in reply to his messages. Nothing. Steve has been tempted to explain how he'd been behind the phone all of his time, blurt out the whole story right there in text form, but he'd prefer a conversation for that, to answer Tony's questions if he has some. The more he thinks about it, though, the less Steve thinks he has a real chance with Tony Stark, apart from maybe a hookup. He has no idea why a genius billionaire would be interested in an ex-army barman. But more than that, though, Steve misses their odd conversations. He'd trade the chance for a date or sex with Tony Stark to have this weird text friendship back in a heartbeat. Unfortunately, it seems he lost that for good, too. A week after the phone number incident, as Steve has come to call it, he receives an email from Thor, their unofficial bouncer on crazy busy days. It has a link to a video with a sleepy otter that squeaks at the camera and asks to be petted. It's awfully cute and actually makes Steve chuckle in amusement. Thinking that he has nothing to lose, Steve sends the link to Tony by text. No apology, no additional comment, just the link, the way Tony used to communicate at first. There's no reaction throughout the day, but Steve was expecting that. It's the first time, apart from right after the phone number incident, where Steve has been the one to make contact. Clearly, even though a bit of time has passed, Tony doesn't want to speak to him anymore. Steve is determined that he won't stop trying to make this right. But should he go hang out near Stark Tower downtown and hope to have a word with Tony? Try to find out if he can schedule an appointment with the guy. He's scrolling up and up on his phone along the long text conversation he had for the last 2 months and can't help but smile. There are so many good ones in there. He's struck once again by how the first few weeks before Steve started to answer, Tony would tweet so randomly, nothing for a day, then three links, or a sequence of 4 days in a row with a message and then a blank of 3 days with nothing. Tony had been persistent for a whole month before Steve answered one night. Steve takes out a notepad and starts taking note. The buzzing alerts Steve that it's almost time. He wipes his hands on the towel and grabs his phone, stepping out back. The alley is deserted and he leans on the brick wall, makes sure that he has the right link. And when his phone chimes, he sends a text to Tony. It's a recipe for slow-cooked pulled pork. That will do, he thinks, nodding to himself. He waits for a minute, but he didn't expect a reply, not really. Hoped for it a little, but didn't expect it. What he wonders the most is if Tony even gets the messages. Because if he doesn't, has him blocked or filtered or changed numbers even, well, Steve is doing this for nothing. He still wants to take that chance, though. With a sigh, Steve pockets his phone and goes back into work. He has a strange customer tonight, a man who's been glaring at him for no reason at all. He's still there, dark eyes observing him, finishing his beer. He hasn't tried to make small talk, just has been observing the bar and Steve in particular. Whatever his problem is, he's finished his drink, so Steve goes to fetch the glass with a small smile. He's about to ask if he needs another, when his eyes fall on a rectangular piece of glass by his elbow and Steve's stomach sweeps. It's one of those fancy Stark phones, the one Tony showed him that night. I didn't know those came out yet, Steve says, gesturing to the phone since he got caught staring. They haven't, the guy says. It's not even mine. He made sure that Steve could see it, though, and again is observing him closely. Steve almost opens his mouth to ask why he'd have a phone that is not his and realizes that it cuts a little too close to a problem he's had, and his jaw closes shut. And who would have a Stark phone prototype but someone close to Tony himself? That this man is here, almost drilling through Steve's skull with angry stares, is not a coincidence. Can I help you with something? Steve asks. I hope you can, the man says, double-tapping the phone in the bar. Tell me, Steve, he sneers. And shit, this is no good. Why the fuck are you messing with my best friend like that? There's a free fall feeling in Steve's stomach for a second because, yeah, that's bad. Not messing with him, I swear, Steve blurts immediately. I would never. But you did, the man says. You and that red-haired woman. I was there when she gave Tony the number. I was dragging his sorry ass out of here. What did she think? Oh, let's troll Tony Stark? That's going to be fun? That's not it, Steve says. They're interrupted when the phone on the bar starts ringing and buzzing. The caller ID flashes. Answer right now, Rhodes. The guy makes a grimace and does so. Rhodes must be his name. Hey, he stops right there, being yelled at. Steve can't make out the words. They are too faint with the bar's background noise. Rhodes tries to say, but there's more yelling. I know! He clamps his mouth shut and rubs at his forehead. Steve is tempted to smile because that seems like an epic dressing down. Yes, Tony, I know you can. I'm sorry, okay? Steve figures Tony has stopped yelling because there's no angry sounds coming from the phone anymore. He's very tempted to ask Rhodes for the phone and try to make his own apologies. No, I didn't punch him, Rhodes is saying, rolling his eyes. He's totally engrossed in the conversation, doesn't mind Steve's presence 1 minute. Maybe a little, just a bit. Does that mean Tony knows where Rhodes is right now? That is highly possible. Not finding his phone, Tony must have tracked it, and being in this bar in particular must have told a pretty clear story. Okay, yes, I understand. Yes, I'm bringing it back. A pause. Tony, I'm bringing it back right now. You will not have my wings for that non-existent crime, even if you can call the USAF. After goodbyes, Rhodes hangs up, shaking his head. Sounded pissed, Steve says. You think? Rhodes snarks. Tony doesn't like the meddling, but that's too bad. There are too few people who have his back. Now, if you excuse me, I need to bring him his toy back before he has an aneurysm. I'd like to have the chance to explain and apologize. It's a long and convoluted story. The mix-up is my fault, but Nat and I never tried to play Tony, Steve says. You keep texting him, Rhodes exclaims. Tell him yourself. Steve can't help the smile. So he's getting them. He is. And I don't know what you're playing at, Rhodes says, but you mess with him one more time and you'll see me again. Fair enough, Steve replies. With a curt nod, Rhodes settles his tab and then goes on his way, leaving Steve a bit rattled. Clearly, he's a close friend of Tony's and wants to protect him, which is good. Everyone needs friends like that. Steve wonders what motivated Rhodes to come over. It's been several weeks now since the incident, after all. He's tempted to take out his own phone and call Tony, start on that apology right away. But no, it would mess everything up at this point, and Tony doesn't have his phone back yet anyway. In the following weeks, Steve continues to enforce his plan. For each weird video or link that Tony initially sent, Steve finds one somehow related, but more in line with his own tastes, and sends it back. Steve didn't realize at first, but everything that Tony sent through the texts, links, or pictures are windows into that big brain of his, if you care to pay attention. It's Steve's turn to share now, sending the info back at the appointed times, and he tries to be creative. Steve's phone never ever pings in return. It's to be expected in a way, since back when Tony thought Nat was at the other end, there was no replies for a whole month. If Tony not only gets his texts, but also noticed what Steve is trying to do, the best hope is that he'll want to play along at one point. Meanwhile, Steve does his shifts at the bar and goes about his life the same way as normal, all the while trying not to center his life on those texts in the void. He's trying to brace himself for the letdown, either no number at the other end of the line, or Tony never ever replying. But hope and anticipation are powerful forces. Steve thinks today is when he'll get an answer. It's the equivalent of the day of the math video, when Tony shared that smart girl with the whiteboard, and Steve finally cracked. Tony had sent that video around 11 o'clock in the evening. Steve has resolved to do the same, and it's like the hours are dragging. It's only 10:30, and he's waited all day. Man, you're looking at that thing as if it's going to explode, Sam says, jolting Steve out of his bubble. What? No, Steve says, a bit guilty as he puts the phone in his back pocket. Sam knows the whole story, at least the whole mix-up with Nat, Steve, and Tony in the middle, and has been real thorough in telling Steve how stupid he was for not coming clean when he started exchanging texts on the regular. Are you still trying to text Stark? I am, Steve says. The admission makes Sam look sad. Steve, maybe it's time to let this go. Maybe it is time. Sam might be right. If Steve doesn't get a text back with the video, he'll do just that. I'll know soon, Steve says. You realize that we're talking about Tony Stark here, Sam says. I don't know what you expect out of this. It's probably a nice way to say that Steve doesn't have much of a chance to hold the interest of a billionaire playboy. He's told himself that a million times. It's nothing new. I know, he's Tony Stark, Steve says. He'd spent way too much time on the internet researching the man. Tony didn't do commitment. He used to go through partners like new shirts, though that seems to have slowed down in the last years. The chances for a guy like Steve to land a guy like Tony for more than a couple of rounds of sex are very slim. I just want to apologize. I owe him that. I'm not saying this to be rude, Sam says. I hope you do get to give that apology. But it's been weeks. I know, Steve agrees with a shrug. Who knows if he even gets the text, Sam adds. He was getting them 3 weeks ago. Hey, your problem, Sam says, backing up, with his hands raised. I'm just worried about you, man. I'm fine, Steve answers, placating. Will you do me a favor, Sam asks. He looks intent, and Steve's so glad to have him. What? Are you going to tell me to flirt with the first interesting customer that comes in again? Steve jokes. It would do you some good to get laid at last, but no. I saw that you've got game since you went straight for Tony Stark last time. Oh, Jesus, Steve says with a sigh. You know perfectly well that I had no idea who it was. Sam laughs and ends up squeezing Steve's arm. I know. You're hopeless like that. But don't drag this out, okay? For your sanity. Steve nods. Yes, I promise. Tomorrow. He'll send the text with the link in half an hour. If he doesn't have an answer tomorrow, he'll give up. He's so nervous. Steve's hands are shaking and his stomach is tied in knots just because he's sending a damn text. He's forced himself to not look at his phone in the last 3 days to mirror the gap that happened before the video. When he finally presses send, Steve is practically having an out-of-body experience with the vibration and heart pounding. He needs to get a grip. This is pathetic. Sam said that he was watching his screen like a hawk earlier, but right now Steve cannot even blink. He's never been able to see if a text had been read, if it's exchanged with a Stark phone, which have thorough privacy protocols. He'd love to see even a little sign that it's been received, but it's impossible. He has to wait. If the time passed slowly all day, the second, now that he has just sent the link, seems to take forever, and Steve realizes he's holding his breath before letting go explosively. 4 minutes now. Nothing. Fuck. The disappointment is like a strong wave that takes hold of his heart and squeezes painfully. He really had hope that Tony would answer this one. But then again, it's a Friday evening. He probably has a million things to do, and many people to do them with. Tony Stark surely didn't sit around waiting for his phone to chime all night. Maybe he'll answer later or tomorrow, or, as Steve didn't want to consider, maybe he won't answer at all. Steve sighs deeply, and he's putting the phone back in his pocket when it vibrates, and he almost drops it on the floor. His heart is back to racing, and it's like his hands are full of thumbs. A messenger alert is disappearing from the lock screen when he finally looks at it, and he hurries to punch his code. Receive from Tony at 11:05. That is pretty impressive. Yes, Steve says, punching the air and grinning so hard he must look like a maniac. Fuck yes! His heart is racing, in the good way, and a little more, and he'd dance around. He's caught Sam's attention. He's raising a judging eyebrow at him per usual, but there's a fond little smile curling up the corner of his mouth, too. Well, look at that, Sam says, and Steve smiles back, beaming. But then he gets nervous, looks at his phone, and doesn't quite know what to do. Steve had thought of many ways he could react if Tony texted, some at this exact moment, but he's still completely unprepared. He wishes that he could go with total honesty, but this tenuous, reformed link could be too fragile, and he's afraid that jumping in right away with apologies could break it immediately. SR sent at 11:07. She's amazing. The video was of Jesse Graff breezing through an American Ninja Warrior course with panache. Received from Tony at 11:08. I'd probably break my face 2 steps in. SR sent at 11:08. The hardest part for me is the log grip. He hates the log grip with a passion. Received from Tony at 11:08. You can do that shit? SR sent at 11:09. In training. Never competed officially. Received from Tony at 11:10. That's too bad. And now Steve's not quite sure what to do. He wants to ask Tony to meet him for coffee or something, but he doesn't quite know if he should wait or not. The decision is taken out of his hands, though. Received from Tony at 11:14. I've got to go. They've been waiting for me to go on stage for close to 15 minutes now. SR sent at 11:14. I understand. Sorry it was a bad time. If on one hand, he's sorry to have disturbed Tony's evening, but he's also happy Tony did take the time to answer anyway. It must mean, he thought it was important enough if he delayed something that sounds official. Received from Tony at 11:15. It's okay, just a coincidence. SR sent at 11:15. Thanks for texting back. I was really looking forward to it. The words look flat on the little screen. He hopes Tony gets that it's sincere. Received from Tony at 11:15. Yeah? SR sent at 11:16. Of course, I've missed texting with you. I've missed you, he really wants to say. Tony doesn't reply immediately and Steve winces. Was this too soon? He decides not to wait for an answer. SR sent at 11:16. Have a nice evening. Received from Tony at 11:17. Meh, schmoozing. No choice but to do it, though. Good night. The words later then or talk to you soon are at the tip of Steve's fingers, but he doesn't dare. He does send a quick bye, but then closes his phone, putting it in his pocket. He'll look if Tony replies, but he won't watch his phone every 10 seconds, desperate for a new bubble. It's tempting, though. A drink appears right in front of Steve's nose, and he realizes he's dropped on the stool they have behind the bar for slow days. How did it go? Sam asks. Steve rarely drinks. He doesn't have a taste for it, and he barely feels the effect unless he really commits. He nonetheless tosses back the whiskey in a gulp. The burn is welcome, shakes him a little bit. It went. Steve resists, taking out the phone to reread it all, but when he thinks about it, he relaxes a little. It went pretty well, he has to admit, and smiles up at Sam. Good, Sam says, squeezing his shoulder. You were expecting this, a text from him. Nodding, Steve gets up and cracks his neck and stretches. God, it's like his shoulders have unknotted, and he hadn't realized it was so bad. I hoped it fitted the pattern. Are you going to be totally useless tonight? You should have taken the night off, Sam says. Steve laughs. And drive myself crazy waiting for a text alone in my apartment? Nah. And I'm good now, I'll be fine. He won't text back tonight. He doesn't think so, at least. Fine. I'm happy for you, man, Sam says with a smile. He's happy, too, even though he has no idea where they'll go from here. Hopefully it's going to be better from now on. Steve waits for 2 days and doesn't get new messages. His mood is getting worse as the time passes. Why did Tony answer if it was to leave him hanging afterwards? Frustrated, Steve takes the messages from the top and rereads them all, checks the time period where he started replying and doesn't get it. Tony had texted again the following day. Why the silence now? And then it hits him. Tony had been the first to text every single time after that. Since Steve has played at reversing the roles, it means the ball is in his camp, not the other way around. Cursing, he types a message. SR sent at 1:20. God, sorry for the silence, my bad. Have you read Watership Down? Before the phone number incident, they'd started talking about books, music, movies, and found they have tastes so different it's almost comical. But the discussions are nonetheless, and maybe because of that, always interesting. Tony's answer comes almost immediately. Received from Tony at 1:21. With the bunnies? Really? Really? Steve grins, because that's exactly how Tony would have answered a month and a half ago. SR sent at 1:22. It's more than about bunnies, and you know it. Received from Tony at 1:23. Bunnies, Steve. Do I look like someone who has anything to do with bunnies? It's the first time that he's referred to him by name. indicating he knows perfectly who he's talking to, and Steve is incredibly relieved. SR sent at 1:23. I think you secretly love bunnies. They banter for a little bit, and it's all for the day. All in all, Steve is happy about it. If he has to take the initiative and text first, he will. In fact, that's what he does. Every day. And when he dares, sometimes twice a day. Tony generally replies right away, and if he doesn't, it's because of work. Steve would love to hear about that, what he's working on, but he figures they need to get each other a little more before Tony opens up about it. Maybe a week after they've started talking regularly, Steve opens up with a pretty cool tidbit about a probe on a distant comet, but the reply blindsides him totally. Received from Tony at 8:10. What do you want from me, Steve? The way it's formulated makes Steve uneasy. It doesn't take a genius to guess that Tony Stark is constantly surrounded by people who want things from him, maybe even just a brush with fame. SR sent at 8:11. I enjoyed texting with you before I knew you were Tony Stark. I'd like to keep doing that. If that's all he can have, he'll take it. Sure, he was attracted to Tony in person and would have liked more, but this is more important to him. He has a couple of good friends at the bar, but it's rare he makes new ones, interesting ones. Received from Tony at 8:12. You didn't know? SR sent at 8:12. Had no idea. Received from Tony at 8:12. That's all? This texting? SR sent at 8:13. If that's all you want, yes. I would also like to explain what happened with Nat and the number. There's no answer, and Steve fidgets nervous. He waits for 5 minutes, but in the end, he can't resist. SR sent at 8:18. Tell you what. I'll eat breakfast at the diner across the street from the bar for the next week. I'll be there from 9 to 10 starting tomorrow. You decide if you want to come over and hear that story, and my apologies. Hopefully Tony will take him up on the offer. It's the fifth day, and Steve is trying to swallow a piece of toast, but it feels like cardboard and almost gets stuck in his throat. There's been no contact from Tony at all, not even a text to say he isn't interested in meeting up or to announce he's stopping even the texting altogether. It's almost 10 o'clock, and Steve thinks he'll go for a run, try to regain some focus. He knows that Sam, Nat, and Thor at the bar have noticed his mood getting melancholic after being almost too cheerful the week before. Do you know at what ungodly hour one needs to leave Manhattan to be here before 10? Steve straightens up, eyes wide, as Tony slides into the booth in front of him. He's dressed with a black leather jacket over a band t-shirt, is wearing red-tinted glasses, and looks totally amazing. Before Steve gets his voice back, Amy, the waitress, is already at their table. Tony looks up at her with a charming smile and gives her a travel mug Steve hadn't even noticed. Could you bring me a coffee, please, Black? Of course, she says, smiling. She barely looks at Steve to ask if he wants anything. Nothing, thank you, Steve manages to say. His heart is racing, hands suddenly moist, and he can't take his eyes off of Tony. Sorry for the wait, Tony says, as soon as Amy has left. As you know, there was a thing in Hong Kong. The thing in Hong Kong? Steve parrots, completely lost. Tony tilts his head, then takes his glass phone out of his pocket and puts it on the table. The launch of this baby at the Hong Kong Electronic Fair? Oh, Steve says. His surprise must show because Tony raises an eyebrow with a smirk. You don't follow the news very much, do you? He asks. General politics and current events a bit, Steve says. Tech news and entertainment, not so much, he admits. At the bar, you had no idea who I was either, Tony guesses. None whatsoever. I am not entirely dense. I thought you did look somewhat familiar, but that's about it. It was refreshing, Tony says. As if to drive the point home, Amy comes back with Tony's coffee, sashaying way more than usual. There you go, Mr. Stark, she says, all smiles and bedroom eyes. That is, until she sees the phone on the table, and her hand flies to her mouth and barely covers a high-pitched sound. Oh my God! Is that the Clarity? Sure is, Tony says, sprawling back in the booth, an arm over the backrest. His smile is perfectly friendly, but even though Steve hasn't known him for long, he sees a difference from how Tony acted when he was showing Steve the phone at the bar. This is rehearsed public relations at work. "It's so beautiful," Amy breathes out. "I've given an account. My pre-order is done. I cannot wait to get mine." "That's great to hear," Tony says. "It's a fantastic phone. You'll like it." "I'm sure I will," Amy says with a cheeky smile. This is nice and everything, but Steve is getting a bit annoyed that Amy is getting in the way of his conversation with Tony. He wishes she'd go away already. Either Tony had read it on Steve's face, or he wants Amy to go away too, because he takes out his wallet next. "Here you go," Tony says, giving Amy a $20 bill. "Thanks for the coffee." "Oh," she says, smiles dimming a little at the clear dismissal. She's looking for change in her apron's pocket when Tony shakes his head. "Keep the change, sweetheart." In fact, he takes another bill and gives it to her on top. "You know what? That's for Steve's breakfast, too." Steve starts to protest. "He can pay for his own food." "Shush," Tony says, waving his objections away. "A little compensation for having you eat out all week without warning you that I couldn't make it. Pepper forbade me to fly back before our showcase was done. Are you done eating?" "Yeah," Steve says, sliding out of the booth. It's going to be easier to talk if they go, since it's not just Amy who noticed Tony. Several tables worth of customers are either blatantly staring or whispering among themselves while throwing glances their way. A teen might even be filming. Steve's not even the one who's being ogled, and he finds the attention oppressive. Tony smiles and pockets his phone before following suit, stepping around Amy with the last thank you. Steve has a feeling that the next time he comes to eat here, he'll get quizzed. "Is it always like that?" Steve can't resist asking, once they're out. Without any idea where Tony wants to go, Steve starts walking down the street. "Sometimes," Tony said with a shrug. "It's always a bit worse after a lot of media exposure, which you missed, but clearly the rest of the world didn't," he adds with a wink. "Did it go over well, the launch?" Steve asks, genuinely curious. Tony grins. "They lost their mind. We'd managed to keep it a secret, too, and I swear there was near fainting." "It's a gorgeous phone," Steve says. "Pre-orders are through the roof. Stock prices are up. The board of directors is satisfied for once, and my PA thinks I behaved. All in all, it's a very nice week," Tony says, taking a sip from his coffee. "That's great," Steve says. He doesn't say that his own week had gone from being giddy from the texting, then thrumming with anticipation at the idea of meeting Tony, to really fucking miserable after 5 days without contact. And now it seems it bounced back to surreal. As if reading his mind, Tony addresses the breakfast open date. "I wasn't sure I'd come at first," he admits. "Then I got caught in a pre-launch whirlwind." "Do you want to know what happened with the number?" Steve asks. "Yes and no," Tony says with a shrug. "Just why didn't you tell me from the start you weren't that girl?" "I was never supposed to answer your texts after that first day, but you kept doing it, and it was intriguing." "Wore you down, huh?" Tony says with a smirk. "Totally," Steve says with a laugh. "I meant for every text to be the last, but you'd pull me back in. Then it had been a while, and I didn't know how to say it, and I really enjoyed our conversations." "Did she know that we were texting?" Tony asks. "Nat?" He shakes his head. "No. She thought I'd stopped it the day after. I really am sorry for everything. I swear, there was nothing malicious." There's a long silence after that, Tony mulling things over as they continue their stroll. It's thankfully not totally uncomfortable. "Did she know who I was at the bar?" he asks. "Yes. Never told me, though." "Huh," Tony says, surprised. "And that's all you want? Us texting again?" That's a loaded question, in a way. Steve doesn't know how much to ask for in fear of losing it all. "I felt like we were becoming friends," Steve says. "So I'd like that, yes." Tony looks at him, critical. Steve forces himself to look back evenly. "At the bar, you were flirting with me. You asked me out, even." "I did. No bother denying that. But now you're not interested anymore because you know who I am?" Tony adds. "What? No," Steve says. Shocked Tony could reach that conclusion. though that's not really fair because Tony's not totally wrong. Steve stops walking and gently grabs Tony's arm so he turns towards him. He looks calm and composed, but there's something guarded in his expression, as if he's not surprised this happened at all. "I still find you incredibly attractive," Steve blurts out and fights the blush, though it's worth it just by the way the corner of Tony's mouth tilts up. "But I don't see what a guy like you would even find interesting in me, past, you know." He gestures, hoping it conveys his body, physical attraction. Tony's mouth is turned back down and his eyes are harder. "Yeah, of course, I'm just that shallow." Steve's stomach plummets towards his heels. "God, no, no," he tries to backtrack. "I'm just very bland, and you're you." That's received with an epic eye roll. "Please, there's nothing bland about you, Steve." It's a very nice sentiment, and it warms Steve right up, but it's sadly misguided. "I spend my time either at my job or working out," Steve says. "The handful of friends I have are working with me." Tony huffs a laugh. "If you want to play the my whole life is work card, I'm pretty sure I've got you beaten. Sometimes vaguely I remember I should work out, but the urge mostly goes away. Oh, and I have my own handful of friends. And by that, I mean three of them. On my frigging payroll," he says with a self-depreciating smile. There's something heady to being the focus of Tony Stark like Steve is now, being dissected, analyzed, and somehow been found worthy. "Steve, you are drop-dead gorgeous. You're funny. At the bar..." He trails off, but Steve knows he meant to bring up how Steve offered water when he noticed Tony was uncomfortable. "Not bland. Never bland." "So you'd go on a date with me?" Steve asks, slightly overwhelmed at the idea. "We could try. Find out if we click in real life, too." Tony genuinely looks interested in how is that for an ego boost. "That's... I'd like that, too. But we can keep texting?" He feels he's really insistent about this, but it's important to him. "Of course," Tony says. "Do you have a lineup of dorky links ready?" Steve laughs. "Dorky links? You're the one with dorky links." "Keep telling yourself that, probe guy," Tony teases. "Ha," Steve says, elbowing him playfully, and Tony evades with a cute giggle. Boy, it's going to be hard not to fall too fast for the guy. They've kept walking, Steve steering them towards the park, and Tony's phone has done a regular faint chiming all the while. He's been totally ignoring it, but now, as there's a lull in conversation as they wait for a crosswalk sign to change, Tony takes it out. "I'm sorry, this is annoying," he says. "No problem." The guy has a multi-million-dollar company to run after all. He tries not to snoop, but can't help to see how Tony's brow is furrowing as he rapidly sweeps on his screen. "Ah, Jesus. I can't leave them alone for one morning," he grouses. Follows incredibly fast texting as Tony replies to something. "Problem?" Steve asks. "Not yet, but it could become one," Tony says with a sigh. "I'm sorry, I have to go." It's disappointing. But all Steve wanted from his breakfast meeting with Tony was to apologize, which is done. On top, he's got Tony's promise they'll keep in touch by text, and the intention to actually date is on the table. "I understand," Steve says. "So I'll be seeing you soon then?" "I sure hope so. My schedule is a bit crazy, to be honest." "Set a time and place and I'll be there," Steve says. He doesn't care if it sounds too eager. Tony smiles, visibly happy, and good Lord, he's beautiful. Their traffic light has turned green, then yellow, and red again, and he's stuck gazing down at Tony like an idiot. "Great, I will." Tony stays there, looking back up at him, and yeah. It's clear they do not want to go their separate ways just yet, even if they have to. Steve is debating if a kiss on the cheek would be too corny when Tony is the one to take action, reaching for Steve's neck and gently tugging him down to kiss him softly on the mouth. The touch is electric and gives Steve a full-body shiver and an army of butterflies in his stomach. What he wants the most in the world right now is to pull Tony close and kiss him some more. But they're on the side of the street, not even on a date. He can wait. "I have a feeling clicking in real life won't be a problem for me," Steve says, as Tony lets his hand fall down and steps back. I'm with you there, Tony says, eyes burning with desire. Steve has half a mind, asking him to come home with him right now. Another chime on Tony's phone jolts them out of the thick tension, and he grimaces. I really don't want to go, but I have to. Go, Steve says reluctantly, but call soon. Tony grins. Got it, champ. Ciao. With that, he turns on his heels to go back towards the diner, where his car probably is, and Steve just has to grin at how he's strutting as he goes. Man has a spectacular ass, that's for sure. He looks until Tony disappears from view and happily goes home. He'll go for that run after all, but frankly, it's with a very light and happy heart. 3 days later, Steve isn't down from his high. Tony hasn't had time to spare for a date, the problem that reared up in R&D being a lot more serious than he thought, but he's been texting pretty consistently since, mostly how he can't wait to see him again. Steve isn't complaining. But he did notice that there's been rarely any more than 3 hours between two texts, and he wonders if Tony slept at all in the last 48 hours. It's a pretty busy Saturday night at the bar, and everyone is working, the place as full as it gets. Steve keeps the drinks coming and the bar stocked, more indulgent than he normally is with annoying drunks just because he can. No one can spoil this day, especially since Tony asked when his next day off was, and they set their first date for Monday. You sure look chipper, Nat says, in one of the rare lulls of the evening. Steve shrugs, but he can't help the pleased smile. Fine, be like that, Nat says, rolling her eyes. Still texting with Tony Stark? Yep, Steve says. He didn't tell them they met, and how it's progressing to more than just texts. As if to prove a point, Steve's phone buzzes with notification, and quite exaggeratedly, he takes it out to check the text while Nat chuckles. Received from Tony at 11:59. You working tonight? Steve frowns because Tony should be aware of that. They talked about it. Eshar sent at 12 o'clock. Yes, until 3:30 a.m. Received from Tony at 12 o'clock. So you're at the bar right now? Eshar sent at 12:01. Yes, Tony, I am at the bar since I work there. Is everything okay? Received from Tony at 12:01. Could you spare 15 minutes? 30 tops? That makes Steve's eyebrows shoot up to his hairline. Eshar sent at 12:02. What for? Received from Tony at 12:02. I'd like to see you. I'm in a car right outside. I know you're working. I won't impose. He's here? That makes Steve grin. Eshar sent at 12:03. Come in then. It's busy, but I'd love to see you. Received from Tony at 12:03. No, not really presentable. I'm a mess. I think I'll go. Sorry. What? He doesn't want him to go, that's for sure. And if Tony cannot come in, Steve will go to him. There are three guys waiting for drinks, even with Natasha busy serving them. Eshar sent at 12:04. No, don't go. I'll be right out. Give me 5 minutes, tops. Received from Tony at 12:05. Okay, thank you. You're sure it's not a problem? Eshar sent at 12:06. Of course not. Wait for me, okay? Received from Tony at 12:06. Not moving. He hurries to take the order of his customers that had been silently judging his texting. Nat, too. And as soon as everyone has paid, Steve turns to Natasha. I'm taking my break right now, he says. It's just past midnight, Nat says, totally unimpressed. When he takes breaks, it's usually a lot later than that. But he generally doesn't take a break, which he's been told repeatedly is not a good thing because it makes the others look bad. She should be happy. Steve gestures to the fact there is no customer at the bar at the moment. I'm taking it now anyway. Fine, she says. He leaves before any customer appears, knowing he'd feel bad if it was suddenly busy. But there's Sam, too. He's coming back behind the bar, having taken orders, and Steve only blurts out break as he passes through. The hell? Sam says, just as surprised as Nat. It's mid-April, and even though the day was pleasantly warm, the evening is chilly as he exits the bar. He belatedly thinks that he should have taken his coat, but a black car makes a signal with its headlights and Steve figures he won't be outside anyway. He jogs over to the big town car and has a second of doubt seeing a man he doesn't know in the driver's seat before the back door opens. "Right here, Steve," Tony says. Sliding in the back seat, Steve is surprised when the car starts rolling as soon as he's closed the door. His eyes are on Tony, though, who has big, huge eyes, and, "Are you in pajamas?" Steve asks, bewildered, looking at the silky red fabric and robe over it all. Tony grimaces. "Yes. Told you I couldn't go in like this." Steve starts laughing, shaking his head. "You're ridiculous." Thankfully, the fondness he can't help but feel must come through because Tony's smile is sheepish but amused. "It has been said," he admits. "So I'm being kidnapped by a crazy man in pajamas," Steve says, gesturing to the city moving past. "Oh," Tony says, lighting up. "I totally planned on having you delivered back soon to the bar, but..." "I do have to go back," Steve says, "to halt that idea right now, even if this is very intriguing." Tony looks disappointed, but also resigned. "Thought so. Curse your work ethic. Happy drive around for 15, please." "No problem, boss," the chauffeur says, before closing the privacy partition. "Not that I'm complaining at seeing you," Steve says, because he's thrilled to see Tony, and he thinks that feeling won't go away anytime soon. "But is there a reason for a pajama visit?" The strangely fragile expression on Tony's face morphs, becoming more guarded. "It's stupid. I shouldn't. I'm sorry." "Tell me," Steve says, firm but gentle. He also dares to reach for Tony's hand, who is all but plastered to the opposing side of the bench, smushed against the door. The contact makes Tony relax a little. "When I haven't slept in a while," Tony starts. "Define a while," Steve interrupts. "Huh, well, 16 hours, Tony says. But he's shifty, trying to cover something. And 16 hours is a normal amount of time for someone to be up between going to bed twice. So there's obfuscation here." "And you slept for how long then?" 3, Tony says, making a see I was good. "That's not much for normal folks, but I do it all the time. I don't have to sleep a lot. 4 or 5 is fine." Sadly, it rings like the truth, but Steve is sure that's not the whole story. "Okay, then. How long did you sleep in the last 96 hours? That makes Tony grimace. "Caught him then. 8. That's crazy. And Steve wants to shake Tony a little, tell him to take better care of himself. But he doesn't feel like he has that right, at least not this early in their new relationship. "You look ready for bed," Steve says calmly. "So why aren't you sleeping right now?" "I wanted to," Tony says, shrugging. "Ate, showered, went to bed. But then I just couldn't sleep at all. I kept thinking..." He tapers out, looks away. "Does it have something to do with me?" It's the only explanation to why Tony would get in a car and come to see him right away. Tony nods. "I'm just wondering. I feel like I pushed a lot to see you, but all you wanted to do was text. So maybe you just said yes to placate me, and then, I know, I get attached, and I'm sort of a disaster, and what if it implodes?" He's babbling, and Steve wants to stop the flow of nonsense, so he brings their clasped hands up to kiss Tony's knuckles, which shuts him up effectively, making him gape. There's a fine tremor to Tony's hand. He's visibly exhausted. Steve is absolutely convinced that it's because Tony is pretty much dead on his feet that he's here at all, opening up like that. He's been careful not to touch feelings and vulnerabilities when they texted, and pointedly avoided even saying why he decided to forgive their rocky start. Steve has to be careful not to do a misstep, because he's afraid that Tony will clamp up and evade once he's back to a regular state of mind. "I want to see you, Tony. A lot. I cannot wait to spend time with you," he says, sweeping his thumb back and forth on the inside of Tony's wrists over his fast pulse. "Yeah?" Tony says, slumping a little in relief. "Yes. And I love our texting. But you don't have to text me every hour or so." Tony must have been doing it this often, just to please Steve. "It's sweet, but not if he feels he absolutely needs to do it to keep his interest. I understand you have a lot of work, and sleep is a good thing, I swear. Been overdoing it, huh? Tony says, looking slightly embarrassed. Sorry. There it is. Steve can feel Tony try to encase himself in armor, to stop showing how rattled he is. You didn't, Steve reassures. Loved every one of them. Makes you feel closer to me, and I smile every time. But there's no obligation, okay? Tony breathes in and nods, then cracks a self-depreciating smile. I'm sorry. I get a bit frazzled when I don't sleep enough. Better you know what you're getting into, right? The crazy comes with the genius. It's fine, Steve tugs on Tony's hand. Could I get a hug? It earns him a delighted smile, and Tony finally slides closer on the car's bench, and Steve closes his arms around Tony's shoulders, who hugs him around the torso right back, hiding his face and Steve's neck almost immediately. It's surprisingly trusting, especially since Tony basically melts into his arms with a satisfied sigh. His hair, soft under Steve's cheek, smells faintly like coconut. Tony says after a minute, not letting go at all. Comfortable. Hot. His breathing has slowed, especially since Steve has started petting his hair. Steve smiles, endeared. Do you think you can sleep now? He asks. Now? Yes, Tony says, nuzzling into Steve's neck. Not on me, Steve says, laughing. He'd love to have Tony sleep in his arms for all the hours that he needs to feel better, but Steve needs to go back to work. In your bed, doofus. Tony whines, gripping Steve's shirt harder. No! It's more playful than anything, and it makes Steve smile. Shh, Steve says, caressing up and down his back. Another time, okay? But I can't right now. If you promise, Tony says, sullen. I promise, Steve says. And he feels Tony letting go, finger by finger, then pulling back. He's pouting, though, and Steve leans in to kiss the frown off his face. He meant to make the kiss sweet, but almost immediately Tony opens his mouth and he can't resist making it deeper, hotter. Tony tastes like mint, and Steve is tempted to slide his hands under his soft pajamas to reach what has to be even softer skin. He stops himself, though, especially when he realizes that the car has stopped and they're back at the bar. The 15 minutes have to be up. He breaks the kiss, but can't help the impulse to push back the hair off Tony's forehead and trail his fingers on the side of his face. He's gorgeous, now with sleepy eyes and a soft expression on his face. See you Monday, okay? Steve says, kissing his forehead. Yes, okay, I can't wait, Tony says. I can't wait either, Steve says, giving him a last peck on the lips before reluctantly getting out of the car and closing the door. It's a Herculean effort not to just ditch the job and get back in that car and into Tony's arms. He looks at the car speed away, but before going back to work, he takes out his phone. SR sent at 12:36. Sweet dreams, Tony. Received from Tony at 12:37. No other choice now. Then right after, received from Tony at 12:37. Thank you. SR sent at 12:38. My pleasure. See you soon. Received from Tony at 12:38. Not soon enough, but yes. Not soon enough indeed. But they will see each other, and Steve knows it's going to be great. He's about to enter the bar when his phone chimes with a new message. Received from Tony at 12:39. Oh, and for Monday, I dare you to find the most dangerous sport out there. We'll compare, and the loser pays for dinner. Steve grins. SR sent at 12:39. You're on. Yes, this will be fantastic. Steve can already feel it. That's the guy he knows. The guy he texted with for 2 months, not even knowing what he looked like, and had already started falling for. So what if he's billionaire Tony Stark on top of that? It's with a spring in his step that Steve goes back to work, already counting down the hours until he can see Tony again. The end.